woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, I want to do a shout-out for everybody and wish everybody a happy Mother's Day. Sunday was a beautiful day to celebrate your mother and your life because, you know, without a mother, no one, and I do not care what religion, color, or class you are, no one would be here without a mother. And just in case you haven't noticed, all mothers are women. I just thought I would mention that. Well, you know, it's really interesting. So Mother's Day is celebration, you know, of our lives, where we came from, and women and mothers must be respected and treated equally in all levels. So happy, happy Mother's Day. And with that thought, I have a special guest with me this morning. On the phone, joining me on the phone will be Harriet Fodd. Harriet is a mental health counselor and a hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is well-published author and writes about the pressures of families and the economics of the United States of America. Her articles have appeared in numerous publications. And actually, this is our fourth interview together. And in this interview, we'll be talking about the history of Mother's Day and talk about the state of women and how Mother's Day can reclaim what is going on. We're trying to reclaim Mother's Day, which at one point was actually an anti-war statement. So it's very, very interesting. And, you know, and the goal I have for this show is to instill in my listeners that as a woman, we have always been struggling to gain our voice and find a way to have peace on earth and goodwill to all. You know, folks, if war was the answer, we would have had peace a long time ago. But war seems never ending. And as women, we need to stand tall and demand an end to this barbaric exercise and a beginning to have more compassion and to look more outside of ourselves and to see what we are for our children. And with all these wars and all this stuff that's going on, what kind of future can we acknowledge for them? I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, the whole idea. You know, war, when I look at some of the footage on war, I just say to myself, what the heck is going on? Why do we have to engage in something so ridiculous? Well, I have a few announcements to make. And first of all, I want to give my condolences to the family of a friend of mine by the name of Donna Lee Alstrad. Donna passed away on March 22, 2016, and she was committed herself to Gather the Woman, a global matrix, and Gather the Women North Bay because she saw a future filled with women encouraged and supported by each other. So, and of Gather the Women. So I was really sorry to hear that. And then I have another announcement. You know, KBBF, we haven't had a fundraiser for a while. And we're going to be having our spring dance featuring Los Remosos and DJ music throughout the evening. That's going to be on this Saturday, May 20th, from 6 to 10 p.m. They're going to have lots of kids' activities, and we're going to have a table for kids. Tickets are $10. Students are going to be $5, and couples are $15, and under 12 are free. It's going to be right here at the Carpenters Hall at 1700 Corby Avenue. And you know, it's important, you know, one of the things that's so great about KBBF is that we are a bilingual station. And so if everybody shows up at the dance, we have different languages, different color skins, all kinds of integrated people. And it's really a lot of fun. So I really encourage people to come on down May 20th from 6 to 10 at the Carpenters Hall at 1700 Corby Avenue. And it's going to be a fundraiser for KBBF. And it's important. We need to support our local station. vibration. You know, we're losing airway all the time. And the fact that we have this wonderful, wonderful station that hits 18 counties here in the North Bay, and we need your support, folks. And this is just another way that we do fundraising. So come on down to the Spring Dance. Ken and I are going to try to be here. That's going to be this Saturday from 6 to 10 again at the Carpenters Hall. Well, there's something real interesting happening this Thursday, May 18th, from 7 to 9 at the Arlene Francis Center, put on by Occupy Sonoma County. It's the March Against Monsanto, Screaming of Sonu, a documentary film about the struggle of Mexican farmers to grow traditional non-GMO corn. And trust me, to be non-GMO is really a struggle. And they're also going to have a wonderful plant sale. So that's going to be this Thursday, May 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Arlene Francis Center. That's at 99 West 6th Street in Santa Rosa. Be there or be square. And a special shout out to my dear friend Emerald from Occupy Sonoma County. And I want to thank her for always letting people know what's going on here at KBBF and Women's Spaces. And I'm glad to announce the program that she is sponsoring. So there's a lot going on in this city, and there is no excuse for being bored. Well, it was a wonderful weekend for me. Absolutely wonderful. I went to Humboldt State University in Arcata, California for the graduation of my granddaughter-in-law. She is marrying my grandson, Ryan Jensen, Amber Lemon. And it just was wonderful. It was a wonderful graduation. And what a beautiful campus. The weather was so interesting. One minute it was raining, the next sunshine, next minute it was raining. But you know, we made it through, and almost 5,000 young people graduated. It was really exciting. They actually had three services, and once you know it, you know, my family end up going to the 8:30 in the morning service, so it was quite a challenge getting up, but it was a beautiful, beautiful ceremony. And what was really interesting about being up there is that at the Humboldt State and several universities across the United States, they're doing what is known as this graduation pledge. And the graduation pledge, it all started in 1987 with the efforts of the Student Citizens for Social Responsibility, a campus club with community members. Their passion about the health and society of our world and concern for the current status quo inspired the movement for the graduation pledge campaign. Their hard work soon led to student, faculty, and community support. It's amazing when you start thinking about it that here's a few students that decided to get together and to create what is known as the graduation pledge. And the mission of the Graduation Pledge Alliance is to build a global community of graduates, those commitment to social and environment responsibility in the workplace and in the rest of their lives is helping to build a healthy, sustainable, and just world. So I'm going to tell you the pledge. The Graduation Pledge of Social Environment Responsibility states, and just imagine there was about about 500 students at the graduation that I was in, was attending. And imagine all these students saying this. I mean, it made me feel so good that there was this kind of awareness. So here we go. The graduation pledge, a social and environmentally responsibility states, here we go. And everybody stands up when they say it. I pledge to explore and take into account the social and environmental consequences of any job I consider and will try to improve these aspects of any organization for which I work. That is amazing to think young people are standing up and taking this kind of pledge. I'm going to say it one more time. I pledge to explore and take into account the social and environmental consequences of any job I consider and will try to improve these aspects of any organization for which I work. I mean, it touched my heart to listen to that. So I just want to do a special shout out to all the students at Humboldt State and all the students across the United States that graduated. You know, high school, I mean, is such a huge honor. I mean, I remember when I first graduated high school, it was like, oh my goodness, I'm a big girl now. And then going to college and getting an AA degree is such a commitment and so much work. And then BA degrees and MA degrees and on and on, but it takes a real commitment. And then when you hand this over and you start thinking about this beautiful pledge of social and environmental responsibility, it gives you a feeling that maybe, just maybe, we might experience some sort of peace on earth here. I mean, it's very, very interesting. Well, that's a lot to think about, and we're going to be talking about Mother's Day and the Mother's Day Proclamation and give us a little bit of a history lesson. But before we do that, we're going to take a musical break. And like I said, we just celebrated Mother's Day and on Monday, and I try to find songs that express some of what we will be talking about. And the song I will be playing, oh, you know, country western, I mean, Harriet Fraud sent me this song. It's called No Charge, and it's sung by a woman by the name of Melba Montgomery. The song expresses so much of what we will be talking about. And when we return, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. We will be talking about Mother's Day, its history, and in Worlds Today. So here we go. Melba Montgomery, No Charge.
And he handed me a piece of paper he'd been writing on. And after wiping my hands on my apron, I read it. And this is what it said. For mowing the yard, $5. Making my own bed this week, $1. And going to the store, 50 cents. And watching little brother while you went shopping, 25 cents. For taking out the trash, $1. Getting a good report card, $5. And raking the yard, $2. Total owed, $14.75. Well, I stood there looking at him expectantly, and 1,000 memories flashed through my mind. So I picked up the pen, and turning the paper over, this is what I wrote. For the 9 months I carried you, growing inside me, no charge. For the nights I sat up with you, doctored you, prayed for you, no charge. For the time there's no charge. When you add it all up, the full cost of my love is no charge. For the nights filled with dread and the worry ahead, no charge. For advice and the knowledge and the cost of your when he finished reading, he had great big old tears in his eyes. And he looked up at me and he said, Mama, I sure do love you. Then he took the pen and in great big letters he wrote, paid in full. When you add it all up, the cost of real love is no charge.
Oh, my goodness. When I first heard that song, I wept. And now I'm weeping right now. I mean, when you think about what it takes to raise a child, the commitment, just to have it to begin with is to carry it in your care for children, who teach children, who are part of children's life. I want to thank you. Anyway, for you who are just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, one of my favorite guests, Harriet Fraud. Welcome, Harriet. Welcome once again to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
And thank you so much for recommending that song. I mean, it is, if it doesn't say it all, I don't know what. I couldn't find a better song than that. Anyway, before we begin, Harriet, can I tell my listeners a little bit about you?
Yes.
Dr. Harriet Fraud, ED.ED, is a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She is a founding member of the feminist movement and the journal Rethinking Marxism. For 40 years, she's been a radical committed to transforming U.S. personal and political life. She has written regularly for Truth Out and journals such as Tikkun and the Journal of Psychohistory. Her latest book, written with Richard Wolff and Stephen Resnick, is Class Struggle on the Home Front. She writes a blog called Economy and Society with Richard D. Wolff that appears on her website, Harriet, HarrietFraad.com, and the website of Richard Wolff, RDWOLFF.com. Her newest publication is an essay written with Tess Fittenwolf, Imagine Personal and Sexual Life Under Socialism. And I believe that's your daughter that you wrote with,
yes, it is.
Which
Tess
appears in the forthcoming book, Imagine Socialism in the USA, HarperCollins. Pardon?
Yeah, it's out now.
It really, it is out there. And also another thing that is really very strong about Harriet Fraud, that she is a regular guest on Richard Wolff's Economy Update. And I believe it's the last Monday. Is it the last Monday of the month?
The first Monday of the month, but it's different. It's the first week of the month, but it's different days because it's on 80 radio stations, so it depends on which station you're listening in on.
Well, I know that we have Richard Wolff's Economy Update every Monday at 11 o'clock, the last Monday, I believe, of the month at 11 o'clock. Excuse me. I'm a little bit confused. I'm looking. He's on Tuesday at 11 o'clock, and Harriet is a monthly guest. So welcome once again to Women's Spaces, Harriet.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about one of our favorite subjects, which is Mother's Day. And, you know, most people, it's real interesting. I did a little survey. I was up at Humboldt State University, and I did a little survey of how many people knew the history of Mother's Day. And I was surprised to not one woman that I talked to, especially the ones under 25, knew anything about the origin of Mother's Day. So let's talk a little bit about that. I know you are a historian, so you have a lot of good information about this. What is the origin of Mother's Day in the United States? And talk about the Mother's Day Proclamation, which was written by Julia Ward Howe, to give us a little background. And also, I'm going to play a little piece as we get into the conversation so people can actually hear the proclamation. So go ahead, Harriet. Give us a little bit of history, if you don't mind.
Well, the first time it was declared, that they don't want to kill other women's children. And they don't want their sons, because at that point it was only sons who went to war. They don't want their sons killing the children. Then, in 1908, Anna Jarvis decided we need a holiday celebrating women, because all our national holidays, and this is pretty much still true, are all about celebrating men. And we need to celebrate women. And she pushed Mother's Day. Then, as Mother's Day started to be accepted and it became an opportunity for capitalist sales, Mother's Day became the biggest day for selling brunches at restaurants, selling flowers, selling cards, and she was so disgusted by its commercialization that she tried to withdraw the holiday, but failed because it's a big economic boon. Well, so that's the history.
What I'm going to do right now, I think it'd be really interesting for our listeners. Let's listen to the Mother's Day Proclamation. And I believe this is read by a woman by the name of Gazelia Howe. So let's hear it. It's a piece that's 1 minute and 53 seconds. And, Gazelia Rowe. Excuse me, yes. Gazelia Rowe. And so we're going to go ahead and listen to that. And then when we come back, I'd like you to talk a little bit about Anna Jarvis's anger and rage and what actually, go a little bit deeper into what happened with Mother's Day. So let's go hear the Mother's Day Proclamation.
Mother's Day Proclamation by Julia Ward Howe. Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have questions answered by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us, reeking with carnage, for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of one country, will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the voice of a devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plough and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after his own time the sacred impress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general congress of women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and the earliest period consistent with its objectives to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace.
The great and general interest at peace. Isn't that amazing? I want to remind my listeners, you're listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and on the phone with me, I'm talking with Harriet Fraud, and we just listened to the Women's Day Proclamation. Do you want to comment on that, Harriet?
Well, that really, it shows that our sisters were very much involved in affirming their feminine power to make peace, that women have been those who bridge the emotional gaps between people. Women are the great connectors, and to affirm that we can do that on a national and international level is a very, very important thing. Very important.
I mean, think of that. It was in 1873. I mean, just think way back then, and, you know, just to give our listeners just a tiny bit of history, what was interesting about Howe and her writing that proclamation is prior to that, they had gone, after the Civil War, they had gone onto the battlefield, and what they found were baskets. I mean, just think of this, Harriet, baskets of arms and legs of young men, and they said to them, they looked at each other and said, this has got to stop, and that's when she wrote the proclamation, and that's when they decided that they were going to honor Mother's Day in this way. Well, talk a little bit, you know, Anna Jarvis, and there's also, you sent me some notes, there's also another woman that you talk about that I have never heard about, and that's Juliet Calhoun Bakely. So she's another person who was very involved. So talk about Jarvis and how she was frustrated, and give us a little history on Blakely.
Okay, well, the main thing is that these women were very angry. Jarvis lived in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, and she wanted it to be the city of motherly love. And she wanted to affirm mother love, because in the 1890s, it also, you know, we have to remember our own history. In 1848 was the Seneca Falls Convention, the first Women's Liberation Movement convention with Susan Anthony and all of the other incredible females that Elizabeth Cady Stanton that made the original women's movement, and they adopted it. And this is very interesting because it shows the spirit of Julia Ward Howe as well. They adopted it according to the conventions of the Native American tribes that ruled communally and where women were honored as elders and where women were empowered. The Iroquois, if you wanted to get a divorce, you just put your husband's belongings outside the tent and he had to find someplace else to live. And the children were brought up by the mother and the mother's brothers and the rest of the tribe. So they were all collective children. And so that they learned from our Native American ancestors. And Julia Ward Howe was learning from the abolition movement. And Anna Jarvis was incensed as a budding feminist that the holidays, as you know, as well as the other women at the time, that there were no holidays honoring the unpaid labor of women. And that is still, you know, the United States is a land of dollars that is still dishonored in that women do not get support. We're not asking for direct pay, but the kind of economic and social support that mothers and get in every other wealthy industrial country. There's only four nations in the world that do not give paid maternity leave: the United States, Somalia, Papua New Guinea, and Swaziland. That's it. That's in whose company we are. And now with Trump, he wants to take out of insurance coverage maternity coverage and make that much more expensive, as if being a mother is a pre-existing condition.
Well, you know,
it's quite amazing.
It's really interesting because when you go back to 1848 and you come up to today's time, we're talking about 169 years have passed.
Right.
With women's struggles. I mean, I remember the women's studies, you know, going to women's studies at Sonoma State, talking about all these things. And here we are in 2017, and we're talking about taking away health care, closing down Planned Parenthood, you know, all of a sudden, you know, no birth control, or birth control is no longer free. So talk a little bit. I mean, here we have this huge history. You have Anna Jarvis, who was protesting about the Mother's Day, and I believe she finally just gave up because it was already taken over. Talk about the situation of the U.S. Mothers today. For example, their earnings. What do you think is behind the idea that they want to kill Planned Parenthood, and they're talking about no birth control? What do you think is that motivation behind
I think the motivation behind Trump and his followers is that at the same time as the women's movement came to fruition in the 70s, the mid-70s, and women started earning our legal rights, the right to have credit, so we could, that wasn't until 1974, that we could have a business in our own name because we could get credit from a bank. When we had the right to own our own homes, when we had the right to divorce, when we had the right to keep our own earnings. Until 1925 in America, anything that a woman earned had to be given over to her husband, except for the butter and egg money that farm women had when they sold their butter and eggs. Everything else belonged to the man. We're talking about a country in which it was legal to rape your wife. It was legal to beat your wife. Those things were transformed in the 70s. At the same time, in the 1970s, men, there were very highly developed, for the first time, highly developed international communication systems, computer systems, and robotization and mechanization, which allowed the outsourcing of millions of what were male well-paid jobs, where white men got one supplement for being white and another for being male in a very scarce labor market. Now the whole world is there for American capitalists to exploit. And instead of blaming the profit motive that changed the whole family and labor landscape in the United States, Trump and his right-wing followers want to blame women and African Americans who also started to fight for and get their rights at that time. But that isn't who exported white male jobs and lowered their salaries. It's just a very cheap way of sucking up and kicking down, of not touching the people who actually run this show for their profit, and blaming minorities and women. And therefore, the kind of rules that they're passing are rules that disempower women, that take away our reproductive rights, that take away our rights to birth control, that take away our rights to abortion, as if that would rectify what has happened to men's jobs. As American men's manufacturing jobs, which were unionized and well-paid, were exported and outsourced, we transferred to a service economy. And it is women who are better at those skills, negotiating, trying to manage people, facilitating, connecting. That kind of testosterone aggression are not suited for those jobs. And women started being employed. Well, and women, once they got out of the house and were employed, didn't want to come home and do a whole second job by themselves of taking care of the household all by themselves and of men's needs as well as children's needs. And so they began to refuse the old deal of doing all the housework and the child care because they also had to work outside the home.
I'm gonna break in here. You know, it's really interesting what you're saying, because during World War II is when women came into the workforce again because the men had to go to war, and so you know I think this is really an appropriate time, you know, to create the image of how women were thought of versus when they had to go back into the workforce and how that changed when the war ended. So I'm going to play a song. This is one of my favorite songs, but we used to play this in my family every Mother's Day. My Auntie Sarah, we'd gather at her house and she would play My Yiddish Mama by Sophie Tucker. And I think this is a very important song because it shows the idealism that is placed on women. But at the same time, what you're talking about is how so much is taken away from them. So let's indulge in this song. And when we come back, if you would comment also and kind of tie that up into what you're talking about, women in the workforce, et cetera. Is that okay, Harriet?
Sure. Sounds great.
Okay, here we go with My Yiddish Mama by Sophie Tucker. And this to me really exemplifies how people feel about their mothers, but at the same time, there's something amiss when you start taking women's rights away and their right to earn a decent wage. So here we go.
Of things I should be thankful for, I've had a goodly share. And as I sit in the comfort of a cozy chair, my fancy takes me to a humble east side tenement, three flights in the rear to where my childhood days were spent. It wasn't much like paradise, but amid the dirt and awe, there sat the sweetest angel, one that I fondly call my kiss that pleasures. She never cared for fashion style. Her jewels and treasures, she found them in her baby smile.
God, I can listen to that song and I'm back and I'm a teenager crying in my Aunt Sarah's living room as we're playing this for my grandmother on Mother's Day. I want to remind folks that you're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holz, and I have with me on the phone Harriet Fraud, and we are talking about Mother's Day. Welcome back again, Harriet. Would you like to comment? I mean, to me, that song...
That song is a great song, and its story is interesting. It was, first of all, it was written by Sophie Tucker, the last of the Red Hot Mamas, who was a very independent woman. She left her abusive family, even though the Orthodox community boycotted her parents' restaurant because she did. And she went to New York, and she sang, and she was a feminist, and she also was against racism, and she was a powerful and important woman. And this song became famous, and the story behind it, as told in Sophie Tucker's autobiography, is that a GI, a Jewish GI, used to listen to it all the time. And when he was killed in battle, his troops insisted that as they marched through Paris, they played this on his record player so that he could be present.
What?
Those sentiments against fascism, of a mother's love and a Jewish mother's love in this case, could be celebrated. And what I really think we have to understand is America has always sentimentalized mothers and punished mothers at the same time. Because, really, let's just look at this. In America, single mothers are the poorest adults. Children are the poorest people, because one in every five lives in real poverty. And single mothers are moms who never married, or who divorced, or separated, or are widows. So that's more women than are currently married. And more than half of them live in extreme poverty, which means incomes below half the poverty level. About $9,900 for a family of three a year, and a weekly family budget of $200 a week. Is that supporting mothers? And only a third of single mothers, divorced mothers, or mothers who have children outside of a marriage, get any child support at all. And most of them, 60-something percent, get less than they're actually promised by the courts. And what they're promised, child support, the average child support payment is less than the average car payment. And that's for a new or even a used car.
What a comparison. You know, one of the things, what you're saying is so interesting. What is it, do you think, what is the phenomena that so many women are choosing not to marry and still have children and are still struggling? I mean, why isn't the government, or why aren't these things being paid more attention to? I mean, I know there was a lot of attention for a long time on this whole idea of deadbeat dads, but there's never been any discussion on how to support this new population of women. So what do you think is happening, that this itself is happening?
Well, I think, unlike countries like the Scandinavian countries and France, in Sweden, for example, a single mother makes 98% of what any man earns. in the United States, all mothers, married or single, only make 70% of what a married man or a father makes, because there's such discrimination against mothers. And that's, I think, because countries like France, who have huge, wonderful maternity allowances where you can stay home up to 5 years and come back to an equivalent job, which is true all over Europe, is because we always counted on having a population by importing immigrants rather than by supporting children in our own society, which is ironic because the same people discriminating against women are especially discriminating against immigrants now. But women, mothers have been terribly ill-supported here. And also, there is a real left. There are socialist and communist movements all over Europe. And it was they who got free child care after 3 years old and who got after school and summer care and free athletic societies for children and so on. But we have not had powerful spokesmen for children and families. The biggest irony is those that most promote family values, in quotes, are the greatest opponents for doing anything to actually help families, particularly the families of single mothers. Most of the people who are working for minimum wage are women, often women with children, and they can't afford decent daycare because decent daycare is $16,000 a year on average. So they can't even, that would take most of their salary. So we terribly discriminate against any mother and child who doesn't have their own economic support. And I think it's because there's a tradition of exporting our labor from immigrants, and there's also this huge backlash of hatred from the men who have lost their jobs through outsourcing and mechanization and computerization, blaming women. So the United States is in a terrible position in terms of women's rights. And so that, you know, two-thirds of single mothers work outside the household, and they're living in poverty. Married mothers do better, but they definitely don't do well because all mothers only make 70 cents of the male dollar. And so even though 70% of mothers work outside the home in addition to the work at home, in fact, still, the average unemployed man, married man, does less housework than his fully employed wife. And women who earn more than their men, the approximately 30%, do more housework to compensate their men for having to be home.
Let me ask you a question here. How did we come? How did we arrive at this point where here we have the Mother's Day Proclamation after the Civil War? You know, we come into establishing Mother's Day, make it this day of flowers. And from what I understand, there's more phone calls made on this day than any other day of the year. Everybody's honoring their mother. You know, you have this My Yiddish Mama by Sophie Tucker, you know, singing about the, you know, elevating the woman, the mother, to this great, you know, this great position. How did we get here? How did we get to this point where all of a sudden no abortion, no birth control, you know, and all of a sudden we still have not got equality in the workplace? How is that happening? How do you stop it? Or how do you change it?
What happened was we only got the vote in 1920, and that what has happened is you really need a surge from underneath. Usually women's issues are carried by a left party of some kind, the socialists, the communists. We haven't had that. That's just beginning now that Bernie Sanders was a socialist, because Americans felt as long as they were white and in families headed by a male, every generation could do better than the last. That was true if you were white and in a family headed by male between 1820 and 1970s. Now it isn't, and there's a huge adjustment that has to be made. The Europeans didn't have that upward mobility idea because they had mobility as a group fighting together, not as an individual male-headed family who could get more money until the 70s and support a dependent wife and children. Americans are just catching on, which is why there is a demand now for child care. It's why the Bernie Sanders movement wanted free child care, free health care. And they have used the sentimental endorsement of motherhood to hide the financial privations. In fact, Reagan said that he vetoed Head Start for everyone, all children in the United States, by saying it interfered with family values. That's a family's responsibility.
Wait a minute. Child care became an infringement on family values?
Yes, they can use that. They can use that, just like they used it to stop the public education movement before that. It interfered with family values. There is a sentimental shield of family values pushed by the right wing. Groups like Focus on Family with Dobson, while they actually fight against every kind of help that would allow families to survive. It's one of the reasons that even though they rail against divorces and women's rights, women get more divorced in the red states than they do even in the blue states. And it's women who initiate the divorces, because these are untenable expectations of women. And women have to really unite to create things like maternity leaves, paternity leaves, early childhood allowances, wonderful early childhood public education. In France, when you have a new baby, you can get $1 an hour quality child care with a pediatric nurse on duty. And then starting at 3, child care is free in these marvelous child care centers with a master's degree teacher and an assistant associate's degree teacher and a pediatric nurse and a room to go to if you have a sick child and so on. We are so far behind, and that it can't be compensated, but they try to. And in country music, which is kind of right-wing populism set to music, it's all about appreciating mothers and guns and trucks, but it's not about giving women the possibility to have maternity leave so they could be mothers, to have paid vacations. We're the only advanced nation without paid family vacations or family time off.
You know something, Harriet, I want to inject something here, a conversation that Ken and I had. It was very interesting with his mother. She was a at-home mother, so when he would come home from school and he'd have homework to do, she could check his homework, she could read to the children. He actually said that he came from a family of 8 children. They actually used to gather around and she would read stories to them. You know, that it was that kind of education that went on, and the interaction when your mother was home. And, you know, I just saw this film. It's called 13 Reasons Why, and it really goes into the whole mentality of high school and some of the issues around bullying and some of the issues around not being heard. And then you see the pressures. There's two parents that own a store, and you see the pressures of the parents that they're not even able to give their daughter the attention that she needs. So do you think that in itself is one of the issues that we're facing, is that the mother is no longer cannot fulfill what even her role is because there's no provision for it? And then secondly, you talk about reclaiming Mother's Day. You know, how do you see that happening? What do you see women doing? How would that shape up in your mind?
Well, I think that nobody ever gets that kind of change without a movement to change it, without uniting together, marching together, supporting each other. And we had a very good start with the women's marches of millions and millions of Americans across the United States, because women are in a terrible bind. Close to 60%, 57.3% of women with kids under 1 are in the labor force. And 75% of people with children from 6 to 17. You know, women have to be in the labor force. We have inadequate child care. So in the years of the most important brain formation, they're put in wet diapers in front of televisions for cheap daycare. It's a terrible crime. And we have to get together and insist that be part of any program that women supported, of any candidate, that you have to have paid maternity and paternity leave and excellent child care and public quality child care centers.
How do you get women to, you know, one of the things that I find, especially when I talk to women, especially young women, overcoming the idea of that somehow to be a feminist or to be a woman demanding certain things is somehow there's something wrong with you. You know, you're being too aggressive. You're being too assertive. How do you help women overcome that to push them in some levels to become? I realize we had the Women's March, and that took a lot of courage, but it takes a lot of speaking out. It takes a lot of going to your board of supervisors, going to your city councils, writing letters to your president, to your representative. How do you move people to keep doing that and to recognize that their needs are not being met and they have a right to it without, number one, the word again, feminist, and then also the word socialist, like it's some dirty word.
And yet Bernie is the most popular politician in the United States still. And he didn't hide that he's a socialist. I think if you have the proper message and you get it out there, they don't care what it's called. Because look at Bernie Sanders. I mean, he's the only Jewish candidate. He's the only socialist candidate. He's a guy, and yet he got the millennial feminists' votes as well as all the other millennials, most of whom didn't bother voting once he was pushed out of the race rather crookedly. And what has happened is Americans usually look for the personal solution. All the increases in U.S. births now are immigrants, people who come and have children because they don't know what it's like here. By the next generation, they have many fewer or none. The biggest increase in the kind of couple, married couple, is married couples without children because it's so expensive here. But once people see that the personal solution isn't enough, and once they can find themselves energized in spite of their kids and in spite of their jobs, they'll get out there. And I think the word feminist got confused with a kind of elite feminist like Gloria Steinem, who wanted gender only and not values. I think that young women realize we have to be united with men who want to change gender roles for their sake, so they can have feelings, so they can be home with their babies too, in order to win. And so feminism got kind of a man-hating name, and I think we have to change it to be that men can be feminists too, and it just means that women are equal human beings, and with men we have to change the world.
Well, you know, it was so amazing when I was at the Women's March and many, 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 many men were there and also men with children. And it was amazing to watch how nurturing and the changes that have come over men because of the women's movement.
Absolutely.
Well,
want to spend time with their kids now.
Yeah, give us a little hint on how women can reclaim. What would reclaiming motherhood look like? I mean, I have a wonderful shirt. I can't remember where I got it, but it's a picture of a woman and a child, and it said, "I will not raise my child to kill another mother's child," which I think is the same thing with the whole proclamation, what she's talking about. So give us a few hints. What do you think? And we're just about coming. I can't believe it, Harriet. We're almost to the end of our segment. Just give us a few hints and anything else that you'd like to add in this conversation that you would like to say to our listeners. And again, I just want to thank you for your brilliance and for bringing such great information to us.
Well, I really do think that we have to unite with men to be sensitive to the nurturing concerns that we could be proud of. You know, I was part of pickets that were against women joining the military, because I felt like our job is to create life, not to destroy it, Let's not destroy it. And I think that our sensibility as women, that connection between human beings is the most important thing, and that we need to nurture, is something that men could join us in, and that women have to insist on as we get active. And we need to get active, and we need to help one another so we can, because women's lives are so much harder now than they were during the women's movement, because men can't support women on their salaries, and more women are alone with their children and their jobs, and our only hope is to come together to demand child care and after school care and reasonable summer care and the same things that every other wealthy European takes for granted. We have to join and say this is the price of our joining, is to have these addressed, these issues addressed. This is personal life, and personal life counts every bit as much as anything else in the entire world. And that's what women have been proud to stand for.
Well, I want to just inject a little story. I talked to a friend of mine about writing a letter to her congressman about something about the Medicare and the Medi-Cal stuff that's going on. And she's very involved. Her husband needs, actually needs Medi-Cal. And because of an illness that he had, he was able to get insurance through Obamacare. But what was so interesting, she says, I don't have time. And I said to her, you better make the time, because if you don't have time, you know, what's going to happen when all of a sudden you don't have any care and no money to pay for it? I mean, it's very important that we take time to become involved. Well, Harriet Fraud, as always, this has been the most amazing conversation, and I would like you to give folks your website, how they can get a hold of you, and also any other information that you'd like to share with us, and any last comments that you might have.
Okay, well, my website is HARRIETFRAAD.com, HarrietFraud.com. And it's on my website. It's also on the Democracy at Work website, where I write a blog on women's issues. And it's also on Truth Out, when I'm on once a month on Economic Update. And really, I think the most important thing now is for people to get together and affirm the values that we believe in, which are being assaulted every day at the Trump administration.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better, Harriet Fraud. Thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces. And I'll tell you, we are in some wonderful times. It's time to stand up, be counted, and let your voice be heard. Well, folks, that's our show. I wanted to give a special thank you to Dr. Harriet Fraud, who's a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in a private practice in New York City. She is founding member of the feminist movement and the journal Rethinking Marxism for 40 years, and she has been a radically committed to transforming U.S. personal and political life. And I want to thank her for giving us such a great perspective on Mother's Day. A reminder, excuse me, tell your friends Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. I'm so excited. I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagement. And if you have any announcements you'd like to have in the air, birthdays, anniversaries, etc., please give me an email at elaine@womenspaces.com. This is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
And I'm in your